to the Gym Podcast. Uncut, unfiltered, unreal.
Welcome everyone to the Gym Podcast. Welcome folks. I'm your host, Jimbo Fisher. Joining this week as always is the one, the only, Randy Darsh.
Hello everybody. Yet another awesome week of college football. We have the season wrapping up. We are two-thirds of the way done with the regular season. So these last 4 weeks, we're going to really see some playoff hopefuls make their push. We're going to see conference standings, conference races really kind of come to a conclusion. So it's exciting to see.
You know, it was a big week in the sport. A few things happened. Should we discuss the elephant in the room?
We should. Is it literally the elephant in the room this time?
I think so. This is this week's elephant in the room. It's Brian Kelly. It's Brian.
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about us.
Oh, no, because we all know Bama's plot armor. Like, that's Bama's winning out. It's not even that interesting anymore, Randy. Let's give the people what they want. They want Brian.
Okay.
Kelly. They want Brian Kelly.
Here's the thing. I remember right after the game, even before the game was over, you asked me to admit that this always happens, and I knew it was always going to happen,
yes.
Yada, yada, yada. But here's the thing. I have to explain. It never feels like it's going to happen while it's actually going on. But you wanted me to admit that it was effortless. I'll give you this. The last four drives, our last two offensive possessions and our last two defensive possessions did make it look effortless. We made it harder on ourselves than it needed to be. But this bye week that we have coming up could not have come at a better time.
Oh,
but our losses always follow like a very specific formula, so to speak. And these types of games tend to follow that until they just randomly don't in like the last couple possessions. So there you go. There's your answer to your questions you demanded I answer.
No, it was, folks, you have to understand, like, from a third party perspective here, like an outside view of all this, like, it was obvious it was going to happen. I remember one point in the game, I called, we were like discussing like what's going to happen here. Bama had the ball. It looked like they were going to kick a field goal on like third and long coming up here. And I said, what if they just score a touchdown? What if they just score a 30-yard touchdown? And then they did. And
you said a 30-yard passing touchdown. It was a rushing touchdown.
Yeah, my bad. Sorry. Right. Yeah, the Jim Stradamus strikes again. But I'm just saying, dude, like, it was so obvious. Like, this is just how it goes with Bama, like, in these close wins all year. I mean, we saw it against Georgia earlier this season, at Missouri a few weeks ago. Bama, they will win these games. And looking ahead of the schedule, dude, LSU, Oklahoma, Auburn, these are all games that, on paper, Bama could lose. But, like, let's be honest, it's best case scenario for us haters, it's going to be a close one like this where Bama comes out on top.
Well, it's just how DeBoer plays his style. You know, we always tend to eke these out. We play up and down to our competition level. So it is what it is. Hey, I'm okay with it. We're winning. I would much rather. We're going to talk about Brian Kelly now because I want to make this point that I would much rather. I'm so glad we're in our position that we're in now instead of being like LSU or Nebraska or something. Like, it feels good to make this kind of transition to this era. So I'll just leave it at that.
Let's discuss LSU. Let's discuss Brian Kelly. So LSU, just a quick recap here. They lose to Texas A&M. It was like a blowout, but like, I don't know, 49-25. I'll say this. I don't think LSU should have fired Brian Kelly.
I disagree with you.
Lock me up. Let's discuss this, Randy. Let's talk about it.
He never seemed to truly embrace LSU. Like, it was weird. He never embraces the places he's at. He's very kind of, I don't know if selfish is the right word.
It's too good for him.
But he almost sees everywhere as what can they do for him,
yeah,
not what can he do for them.
Sure.
And it's just like he wanted to use the resources and brand of LSU to elevate himself. And you can tell, like, he's always yelling at staffers, always blaming players after the loss. I can't remember a time where he said, this is my fault. Right. Mm-hmm. And I just, something about him rubs me the wrong way. And I can see why they fired him. I mean, if they know it's something they're going to have to do eventually, you might as well do it now. Right.
The counterpoint.
And I think they made the right. Go
ahead. The counterpoint
ahead.
I have for this, as well as James Franklin, as well as, you know, to an extent, Mike Norvell, Billy Napier, is sure, you can fire these head coaches because they didn't make the playoffs. And that's the new standard. It's playoffs or bust, like it is for these programs. Right. But like truly this year, when you look at the field, who is available that's going to come in and save these programs and elevate them to this level they want? Like, I know we can talk about Lane Kiffin all day, but like, if Lane doesn't leave, if Matt Rhule doesn't leave, like, there's no big up and coming, you know, oh, that offensive coordinator over at Bama or Clemson's real good. Or there's no great G5 coach you can pick from, like Luke Fickell on paper was, right? Like, who's going to replace these guys and be better than Brian Kelly?
I think a lot of people would be better than Brian Kelly at LSU. I think James Franklin would actually do a much better job than Brian Kelly at LSU. I think you're going to see programs trading coaches, so to speak. And it's going to work out for some, not work out for others.
Oh my Lord.
Maybe they learn something, you know, take an off season to kind of recollect themselves and, you know, kind of reflect on how they failed and all that good stuff. And kind of maybe pull it together at another program. You say, who are they going to get? But a lot of it's also going to come down to administrative support as well and how they support the incoming head coach. And here's the thing. Brian Kelly also had 4 years, and he never made the playoffs. It's not like this is just over 1 year.
He was close.
At LSU, with how much resources they have, with the talent they have available, you got to do better than that. Like, he probably could have gotten away with this, with his performances in the season, if he just wasn't so unlikable.
I mean, yes, he's certainly, like, one of the most unlikable coaches in the game. But, like, I don't know, because, like, one of the biggest things I've heard people talking about in regards to Brian Kelly is, like, he was not a good fit at LSU. He didn't fit their culture. Coach O was the ultimate fit for LSU. You'll never find a better fit for LSU, and they got him out of town. So, like, I don't know. Like, I don't know what you want at this point. If I'm an LSU fan,
I don't even think it's about fitting the culture in so much as embracing the culture. Because, like, let's face it. Like, Saban was from West Virginia. He coached at LSU before, sure, but he embraced us and embraced Alabama and molded it to a certain degree. Kalen DeBoer, he has never coached in the Southeast before.
His name is Kalen,
but his name is literally Kalen. That is the most upper Midwestern name I've ever heard. And he does fine here. Like, we embrace Kalen DeBoer. It's about a mutual embracement, and you have to have it on the coach's side as well.
Would you say?
I don't think it's about finding an Alabama guy or a Louisiana guy, but just somebody that's going to love LSU and appreciate LSU.
Would you say it's about family?
I would say it's about family.
There you go. Okay. Well, I feel
like I say it too authentically to even, like, I can't mock him because I actually say it the way he was trying to say it.
Yeah, I'm more qualified probably to mock him there, but that's certainly been the biggest news this year. But I mean, I think, like, at this point in the season, man, we're like, Florida State's probably going to fire Mike Norvell soon, right? Like, I think,
right,
it, like, this doesn't stop here, and it makes you wonder who else is potentially on the chopping block. I think Michigan, Sharon Moore, I mean, I know they're winning, but, like, I don't know, man. There's just a lot. Hugh Freeze, you know, he can kind of go down the list here, man. There's going to be a lot of
Hugh Freeze is staying. I love that Hugh Freeze is just getting so much Should I talk about Hugh Freeze? Should I talk about him?
Let's talk about Hugh Freeze. Sure.
I just think it's hilarious how Auburn is so bought into Hugh Freeze still. Like, he's such a good old boy. But that's the perfect example of a cultural fit and why that's not necessarily the most important thing, because he's such a great cultural fit that they're giving him way more chances than he really should get. Mm-hmm. And they keep chalking up these losses as, well, actually, we can just say we won because of a bad ref call here and there. And it's like, come on, that's cringe. Everybody gets calls that goes against them. Yeah. They spend more time complaining about calls than just improving what they need to improve.
Right. That, you know, with all that said, whenever we talk about Hugh Freeze and Auburn, we got to talk with the elephant in the room here as well. With all these openings at big, you know, high profile schools, do you think one of the names that gets thrown into the hat here is PJ Fleck?
I feel like he's probably happy at Minnesota, because, like, Minnesotans, you know how they are. They're the kind of people that will just let him do what he wants to do culturally, program-wise, and just be all for it, all shucks.
The boat.
Right?
Yep. Mm-hmm. The boat. We know about the boat.
Not a lot of places are going to do that, and I think PJ Fleck is smart enough to realize that and realize that the grass is not greener.
Interesting. I hope he goes.
I mean, does PJ Fleck even care about winning, if we're being honest?
He cares about his brand. You know, we talk about, like, Brian Kelly, like, what can this program do for me? I think PJ Fleck's also kind of in that boat, pun intended. And if a school, you know, if LSU calls him and is like, hey, let's row the boat here, he would do it. He would. He's trademarked it in his own name. So, like, that will go wherever he goes. And, like, that's the thing I'm excited about most is this whole, like, the fact that Minnesotans have, like, made rowing the boat part of their identity, even though it's, like, literally his shtick. Not theirs. It's his shtick. He did it at Western Michigan. He's going to do it wherever he goes next. I'm like, that, it's going to be cinema when they can no longer use that legally. So.
I feel like PJ Fleck has embraced Minnesota the minimum amount one can to be able to still say he's trying to embrace them, mm-hmm. at least on paper. Does that make sense?
It does. It does.
And it's not as cold as how Brian Kelly treated LSU.
No, I get that. Yeah, that's fair. Randy, any games you want to discuss, or we should talk about the Super Bowl of the week?
We can talk about, I guess, I just wanted to ask regarding the Oregon-Wisconsin game. Did that give you any amount of hope? How did you feel about
okay,
it?
So
21-7, you lost 21-7 to Oregon.
So we all know about the email that came out last week from Chris McIntosh, AD. I was talking to a friend from college this last weekend, who we talk football a lot, and here's kind of where I'm at. He's talked some sense into me, Randy, okay? We don't fire Luke Fickler right now. Because you look at the landscape, there's too many high-profile openings. If there was a good coach available, we're not going to get him. LSU or Penn State's going to get him, right? We wait 1 year, and we wait, let's say, 3-4 games into the start of next season. And if it's obvious by that point, and it probably will be, but if it is, that he has not gotten his act together, at that point we pull the trigger. And we'd be the first ones to do it. We're like, we'll be the first big high-profile firing of 2026. And that'll give us a head start at making these calls, getting some deals going on behind closed doors to get rid of them. Because there is a chance, maybe if we did have a starting quarterback, we could win a game like this. You know what I mean? Like, if we just had, like, a bad offense, we could probably win some games. Like, that's kind of where I'm at right now with Wisconsin football.
Instead of the literal worst in Power Four.
Literal. Like, literal. I mean, guy, like, we're not, like, to be fair, and I can't believe I'm being fair to Luke Fickle, but, like, if you saw our quarterback against Oregon, dog, he was at one point, like, I think, like, 1-for-12 or something on throw. Like, just, like, barbaric, like unfathomably bad. Unfathomably bad quarterback play. But to be fair, he is a third-string quarterback. And so, like, it makes you wonder, like, if Billy Edwards Jr. didn't tear his ACL handing the ball off in the first game, like, maybe, I'm not saying we'd be great, but, like, maybe we wouldn't have lost to Maryland or Iowa. Yeah, maybe
you'd at least be building some momentum.
Momentum, yeah,
for his direction,
like,
of the program.
Like, hey, you see the potential here. Let's get a few more pieces, and you know what I mean. But, like, I've accepted it. Luke Fickle's not getting fired this year, but, like, the upside is I do think it gives us like full on. If by this point next season he's not improved things, he's gone, and we're getting someone better. Do you think that's fair?
I can see it being fair for the simple fact that these high-profile coaches that are getting canned, mm-hmm. you know, they're probably not going to find a head coaching job immediately. A lot of them may become analysts for a year. Yeah. They may just be support staff for a year, sure. what have you.
Yeah.
So they're going to be looking more for a head coaching job next in year. 2027 James instead
Franklin,
of 2026.
Brian Kelly, right. Jimbo Fisher. You never know.
You never know. He might be an okay. Like I said, and for a lot of these guys, yeah, they failed at their last places, but a change of scenery can do a lot of good, especially with you're proper off. Administration support. Yeah. I think it's going to come down to your administration and your AD mm-hmm. more than anything mm-hmm. to kind of get the ball rolling on how to, I guess, build a successful program, get some funds, do some fundraising, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Because it's more than just hire a coach and just have him do it all. Because right. You can't. But I'll be honest, I am surprised Wisconsin hasn't joined the mix at this point. Like, I am very surprised. But, like, you never know. I guess that's true. You never know. Maybe we've seen it before where a coach sucks for 3 years, then year four they finally get it rolling. You just never know.
This is where historically, like, for what it's worth, when I think about all these firings, like, again, with, like, James Franklin especially and a little bit Brian Kelly, it's like, this is kind of unprecedented. Like, coaches didn't used to get fired like this. For having, like, one down year. You know, I think, like, the stakes are just way too high. With Fickle, it's been 3 bad years, and it's been regression. It's, like, it's that's why it's warranted. But with, like, with Brian Kelly, like, I Brian Kelly, if he hadn't gotten fired, I think next season they'd be starting the year off ranked top 15. They'd be getting a top 10 recruiting class. Like, it'd still be...
And then they'd go 9-3, 8-4 again.
Sure, but, that's like, that's still good. Like, that's not, I'm saying, like, maybe I'm speaking from like a desperation tone here, seeing as how my team is 2-6, but like, man, like, I'd kill for that right now, dude. I'd kill for that kind of stability and that kind of, like, you know, like, guaranteed performance that you're going to get out of these coaches. And I don't know, man. I've learned the hard way. The grass is not always greener, you know?
You can create a higher floor with proper administration, like have any bozo back there coaching. Mm-hmm. And as long as you can have the locker room butt in, you'll have a floor of like 7-5, 8-4. Mm-hmm. And I feel like LSU sees themselves as that kind of program, and for good reason. Mm-hmm. And especially, it's got to hurt to see a dude like Mike Elko come in and immediately just be 8-0.
Bozo, push dude,
the number three.
Mike Elko is, dude, he pisses me off. Like, A&M, they fought these wins. Like, it's not Mike Elko being a genius, you know? Like, I don't...
They've played a Charmin schedule.
Charmin ultra soft.
Played, like, four of the bottom five teams in the SEC and barely won these games, yada, yada. I mean, they did beat LSU, but, like, I mean, LSU's not that good.
No. So, I don't know, man. Like, for what it's worth, Rant, you are going to have a great time in the SEC championship against Texas A&M. Oh, my days. Honestly, I'll be rooting for you. Like, A&M does not deserve to win that game. So,
Fair enough. I'll leave that to you. I still have, like, what, 4 or 5 weeks to worry about that. Do we want to go for the This Was Their Super Bowl
award? I got an easy one. You ready for it, Randy?
Please don't steal mine. Go for it.
Texas.
Dang it.
Yeah, I mean, let's be real. Like, it was obvious. Like, we all kind of knew it. This is one of those games where, again, we kind of knew what happened. But they came back, scored 24 points in the fourth quarter against Mississippi State, ended up winning an OT 45-38. But, like, dude, like, it's Mississippi State, dude. Like, what are we doing? Like, it shouldn't have been this dire in the first place.
Right. And Arch Manning got injured, and their backup quarterback immediately throws, like, a perfect strike touchdown pass that had to be accurate in the perfect place in the back of the end zone. So, like, I'm kind of wondering if Arch Manning might have just lost his job, his starting job.
To Matthew,
I doubt it. I feel like the Mannings are too much in Sark's ear, you know. Yeah.
So Matthew Caldwell, this is a real great. This is indicative of the state of college football. The current starting quarterback for Texas. Guess how many schools he's been at in 5 years?
Five.
Yeah, four.
Four. Okay.
Four schools in 5 years. Started out at Jacksonville State.
Oh man.
I went to Gardner Webb. Made his way to Troy and somehow ended up on Texas. As much as you clown on Arch, at least like Arch is like he's very much like a Longhorn until he, I guess, transfers next year to Troy or something. But I don't know, man. I don't know. It's just.
I don't know. It's hard. The situation is a little different. You can understand him transferring to Texas.
I get that. It's just, you know, coaches are leaving, players are leaving. There's just so little continuity between any of these teams. It's a weird time in the sport, you know.
It certainly is. My This Was Their Super Bowl award. I mean, you took mine, so it's kind of hard to give it. I kind of want to give it to Tennessee for blowing out Kentucky.
Yeah,
like they were a little too celebratory of that. I mean, it's Kentucky, it's man. Kentucky, winning 56-34 means nothing. If anything, you should be more concerned because you allowed Kentucky to score 34.
That is staggering. Yeah.
I kind of want to give it to BYU for being the most fraudulent. I'll give it to BYU, actually, okay, for being the most fraudulent 8-0 team I've literally ever seen.
Probably since, I want to say, was it 2015 Iowa? That to me is the all-time, like, ultimate fraudulent undefeated team. But yeah, BYU this year is definitely up there, and they're going to win out. Like, let's face it, they're going to be undefeated. And whatever SEC team they face in the playoffs, they'll be eating some Cougars that night, let's just say.
Their defense is just so not good either. Hey, like, they have a decent enough offense. The Big 12. Yeah, they don't play anybody. I mean, they play Texas. We'll talk about the Texas Tech. Well, actually, I think they have a bye week first. Never mind. Yeah. Next gym podcast.
We'll go in on that one. But,
My elephant in the room was actually going to be, did Arch Manning lose his job? And I already kind of talked about that.
But do you think he did? Like, yes or no? Like, what do we think?
I think if his last name was not Manning, I think he would have lost it.
Okay.
I think the Mannings are also going to be a little bit in Sark's ear, even if not directly. Like, there's some politicking involved. Texas is the ultimate politicking college football team. So
sure.
I don't think he lost it for that reason.
Sure. My elephant in the room is North Carolina had a really embarrassing loss to Virginia. They almost took him down. But North Carolina right now is 2-5. We talk a lot about coaches being fired. We typically talk about good coaches, or at least like high, you know, high profile coaches. Do you think Bill Belichick stays another season at this point?
I have no idea. like, maybe he just rides it out.
Yeah.
Rides it out for one more year and gives it a try.
I don't think any coach...
what does he want? What is he getting out of this? Isn't he like 75?
I don't know, dude. Like,
It's like he just so desperately wants to be young and hip at this point and just be with it that he's going to probably stay another year to get that college coach experience with his 24-year-old girlfriend.
But like, if he wanted, like, he has the money. He could if he could just go to Cancun, chill out on the beach the rest of his life with his 24-year-old girlfriend, you know.
And he doesn't want to do that, though. He wants to hang out with the other 24-year-olds and be hip and young and cool. He doesn't want to, like, be retired.
Interesting.
Yeah, I really think that's what it is. He's trying too hard to kind of hold on to his glory days, so to speak, and keep living that life as long as he can. Instead of just accepting the next phase of his life, like Saban. Saban could go out and coach somewhere, but he's accepted this phase of his life. He loves being an analyst. He loves hanging out with his grandchildren. That's the thing that Saban always preached, like, life after football. As serious as he was, he always backed it up with this idea that you're only going to play football until you're 30. You have another, hopefully, 55-plus years left to live after that.
Right.
Like, there's more to life than football, as much as football is his life. So Saban now hangs out with his grandkids, hangs out on the lake, is an analyst and gets to hang out on college game day. Having the time of his life. And Bill Belichick doesn't seem like the kind of guy that's able to embrace that.
What's crazy about Bill is, like, he could have just, like, retired after Brady retired or, like, left the Patriots. And, he would have unquestionably been, like, the best coach of this era, at least for the NFL. Like, there'd be statues built. He'd be, you know, like, and it's just, like, not that he isn't, like, historically a great coach, but, like, his legacy, I feel, is so tarnished from, like, this last 12 months, dude. It's like it's insane how this fiasco at North Carolina has just, like, you can't take him seriously anymore. And so it just goes to show, man, like,
I was wondering how much this tarnishes his legacy. It's not even just that he flopped at North Carolina, it's the embarrassing antics associated with it. Because like, Bill Belichick was always known as this, like, I don't care about the media.
Yeah, it's good impersonation.
Onto week, whatever. You know, and now he's got this 24-year-old girlfriend that has all this media circus going on, is obviously in tune with all this drama.
Right.
Like, it goes so against who he was as a coach of the Patriots that it kind of does hurt his legacy.
Yeah. He was always seen as this, like, kind of, like, sort of like Saban of, you know, cut from the same cloth of, like, very serious, very stern, like, no frills, right? And to go from that to this, it's just, it's whiplash.
Right. With Brian Kelly, I feel like I want to bring him back up. I kind of wonder how quickly he's going to get back into coaching, because I feel like somebody like Brian Kelly, we talk about he's kind of an a-hole, right?
Yeah.
I wonder if he's going to, like, try to immediately get back into coaching, like, next year, immediately get a head coaching position, or, like, take some time to reflect on how he treats others.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Do that sort of thing and wait a little bit and learn something, this and that.
Talk to his family.
Because I just, well, I was looking up some of his incidents, and he has, like, 8 different incidences he, like, yelled at a staffer, yelled at a player. I accidentally deleted the tab. That's okay. Hold on.
I can name one while you're waiting. Matt LaFleur, Packers head coach.
And Robert Saleh.
Yep. There's a great story of, I guess it was, like, a Christmas party or something they were invited to. They were assistant coaches at the time at Cincinnati, I believe. And they got to the party, and Brian Kelly made them, like, I want to say shovel or, like, move cars the entire day, like, the entire
party. I think it was both, actually.
Yeah, like, they were doing that the entire day, and apparently they both, like, vowed that night in their apartment that if they ever made it big, they would never treat their staff like this. Look at that. Brian Kelly's making people better people by being so mean to them. Think about that, dude.
That's actually kind of funny. It's just constant sideline behavior, like shoving players, shoving assistant coaches, getting really into a player's face in a way that's just not appropriate, like blaming staffers. What are you doing? That sort of stuff. Like, when Saban would yell at players, it never seemed as toxic, like he was going to throw them under the bus. Because to the media, Saban would always blame himself. Right. He would never put blame on the players in the post-game press conferences, right?
Yeah, you can't.
Because he's the head coach. It's your job to get them ready. Like, that's an indictment on you. You're the one who hired these coaches. You're the one that recruited these players, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Your guys. Obviously, there's the incident. BK, KAK.
And that's another, I'm just going to be honest here. That's another example of him just disregarding somebody else's safety, because he was told about how the winds were too high for the forklift. It was not safe. He's like, no, we got to have this video for this one specific practice. And then a kid passed away because of it. And it's just, it's really sad. I'm surprised that doesn't get as much heat as it does.
I think about that. Yeah, it's weird. Like, I don't even remember hearing about it at the time, but I feel like it kind of came to light like years later. Like, people were like, oh, wait a second. Like, Brian Kelly killed a kid. What's going on here? And like, now it's obviously with kind of where we're at now, like, people bring it up constantly. But I do feel like if it happened today, like with social media and stuff, it would be like, there's no way he would have gotten off like he did, you know, 15 years ago.
Okay, here's an example of something Brian Kelly was recorded saying on the sideline to Chris Hilton. There's like 10 different incidences of stuff like this, but I think this one stood out to me, mm-hmm. where he says, who do you think you are? You are effing uncoachable.
Wow.
That's not something you say to a player, mm-hmm. especially during a game. You know what I mean? That feels like you're arguing with your wife when you bring up the D word. Like, you can't go back from that, because it's such a personal severing, like, distancing of your relationship with that person to sure. say that line. You know what I mean?
I do. And again, during a game especially, you know,
it's like somebody who threatens to break up with somebody in an argument as leverage. That's the kind of person Brian Kelly seems to be, yeah. to me.
Yeah, no, yeah.
Hey, Notre Dame fans tried to tell us the whole time.
They tried to warn us. And, like, you know, maybe take a year off, reflect, go to therapy. I don't know, something.
All right, so for next week's games, we have a very interesting slate, because, to be honest, looking at these games, there's not exactly a whole lot that really pop out to you mm-hmm. as like big-time matchups, right?
Right?
But this feels like one of those weeks where you just see a bunch of teams vying for playoff hopes get upset. So I think it's going to be one of those weeks that's deceptively amazing. Like, you don't think it's going to be great going into it, but we're going to see some great upsets, and it's just going to be so entertaining, and we're going to laugh and post about it on the internet and laugh at certain teams.
Right.
So the only real game I actually wanted to talk about before I kind of give this list of games is we have 7-1 Vanderbilt at 6-2 Texas. Top 10, number 9 Vanderbilt. For some reason, Texas is favored. Jimbo, I just have a feeling. I'm scared, yep. man. I don't want the Vandy train to die. I think... And I don't really like Texas that much.
Good news for you, Randy. I've got my lock of the week. Vanderbilt's taking down Texas. Sorry if I stole yours, Randy, but it's true. Arch or not, Texas is not a good team. So I'm not too worried about Vanderbilt winning this one.
Their backup quarterback threw that perfect touchdown strike in the back of the end zone. Like, what if he's good? He can't be worse than Arch.
I don't know, man. I Vanderbilt's a good team. So I don't like Texas.
They're very athletic on the lines of scrimmage. That's one thing that really interests me about college football now, is just how much parity there is, and how teams like Vanderbilt and Indiana like are actually good and athletic on both sides of the line of scrimmage, mm-hmm. which is where you need to be great as a team to actually have a chance to make a championship run.
Right.
So it doesn't feel like they're just going to be sacrificial lambs. Like, it doesn't actually feel like they're sacrificial lambs in the playoff. I know that's also partially due to a lack of truly hyper big elite teams now,
mm-hmm.
but it's interesting. Like, you see a team like Vanderbilt and you're like, yeah, I could win a couple games.
For sure.
They make it. Anyway, so just to bring up some examples, some like no loss or one loss teams playing some mediocre teams that aren't horrible, but aren't good either, where an upset could happen. At 11 o'clock, 3-4 Penn State at 7-0 Ohio State. You think there's a chance?
I'd love it. It'd be really funny if, now that they fire James Franklin, they pull it off. But realistically, no.
Okay, I agree. It's way too obvious. And also in the 11 o'clock slot, we have 6-1 Miami at 5-3 SMU.
I think that we're at the point now where like Miami is about to like totally fall off and like stumble over itself. So I actually do think SMU has a good chance of winning this one, especially being at SMU.
I feel like it's too early for like the big stumble. I feel like the big stumble will come in like 3 weeks, 4 weeks versus North Carolina State
happen.
At Virginia Tech at Pitt. It will happen. Oh, yeah, it's going to happen. I just don't think it happens this week.
Fair enough.
We have my lock of the week. You guys are not ready for this. 2-6 West Virginia.
Whoa!
At 7-1 Houston.
Sexel Steve.
Saxo Steve, shout outs. I believe they have the win over Pitt. I know it's a rivalry game. I feel like West Virginia, they have a weird feeling towards Houston because they at one point hired Dana Holgorsen and, you know, they didn't like Dana Holgorsen. It's just, there's just Packers at play. It's vibes, purely vibes based.
All right. That's a fun lock of the week, Randy.
But I'm just saying, you're seeing the examples of what I'm talking about, where this could be a deceptively great week with some great upsets. In the 2 o'clock slot, we have 6-1 Louisville at 3-5 Virginia Tech. Louisville has a real shot at the ACC, sort of.
Yeah.
Granted, they have a conference loss. They already have a win over Pitt, who is another one-loss team. But Georgia Tech and Virginia are both undefeated in conference. They don't play each other, and Louisville plays neither of them. Mm-hmm. So that's – I mean, they have to
– Louisville's got to win out.
The other way.
Louisville's got to win out. But yeah. I think if they win out
– I mean, as an 11-1 ACC team, they have a great shot.
Yeah, for sure.
8-0 Indiana at 4-3 Maryland. Could happen. Could happen. I don't think it'll happen.
But no. Not to Maryland. No offense, NSB. It's not September.
6-1 Georgia. Not at neutral siding versus 3-4 Florida. I know this one's not going to happen either. Again, way too obvious. Florida's going to go up early. They're going
to. Oh, yeah. They'll be up like 21-3 half or something like that, probably. It'll be a relatively big lead that they'll blow. You know what I mean? It's guaranteed.
Right.
It's guaranteed.
We have 7-1 Texas Tech at 4-4 Kansas State. Could happen, especially with how many of these are away games. I'm noticing could happen.
Yeah.
Big 12 is still very wide open, and I'm going to be very interested to see who represents the Big 12.
Because I am too.
BYU and Cincinnati are both undefeated in conference. Texas Tech and Houston both have one loss. Texas Tech does still play BYU. Mm-hmm. Houston doesn't play any of these three teams, but they did already lose to Texas Tech. And Cincinnati and BYU do play each other later in the season. So we'll just see. And BYU does play again at Texas Tech and at Cincinnati. So it's going to shake out, and it's going to be a very interesting conference race. I did also kind of want to make a small point that, you know, I don't think the regular season has lost much value with the expanded playoffs. You're seeing how many great games there are. Like, it shifted the focus to certain games. But that doesn't mean it's lost value. Like, these are going to be very interesting matchups that
the midfield is way more interesting now. Like, these, like, 10 through 20 type teams, right? It's like there's way more at stake in my mind.
And that also ties into what I just said, where there's no real, like, sacrificial lamb-looking teams. Again, with the lack of truly hyper-elite teams in this modern era of football, NIL, portal, et cetera, like, these 10 to 15 teams, you think they could actually make a run?
Yeah.
Like, there's an actual possibility. Another example, we have 7-1 Virginia at 5-3 Cal, another away game. We have 3-5 South Carolina at 7-1 Ole Miss. South Carolina is they're so dangerous, man. They're way better.
Really interesting. I mean, shots up to 5-3-2, but I do think Ole Miss being at home, it all comes down right to like how Lane Kiffin is feeling, if he's distracted or not. But I think that regardless, he's probably going to want to make some like big statement wins before, you know, the end of the season is up and he's maybe discussing some contract negotiations with people. We'll see. But I think Ole Miss wins this one.
What I find interesting is that Ole Miss and Florida play each other as the second to last game of the season.
That'll be fun. That'll be interesting.
That will be very
fun. Is it at Florida?
No.
Okay. Lucky him. Because if that was at Florida,
you know, Ole Miss's fan base is going to show up and do everything they can to keep kicking. And that honestly might be what gets him to stay. Like, maybe, just seeing the support from the fan base, knowing they're not going to turn on him the second he goes 8-4.
Right. Yeah. Yes. Ole Miss is a program that would not fire him for losing two games like LSU.
Well, his teams always look competent. I never see a team, an Lane Kiffin team, that just looks like they don't know what they're doing. It looks more like a car that's having trouble getting started rather than a car with a broken down engine.
So, good analogy.
All right. Great analogy. I'm proud of that one. We also have, in the night slot, 6:30, we have 8-0 Georgia Tech at 4-4 North Carolina State. Could happen. Can happen. I think this is probably one of the more likely ones.
I disagree. I think Georgia Tech, dude, like if Georgia Tech loses, it's gonna be like maximum heartbreak. Like they lose to Georgia or something in like a last second field goal. Like they're not gonna lose to NC State at this point.
I mean, that's true. I get what you're saying. The thing that's interesting about the ACC, though, is there are only two undefeated conference teams left, Georgia Tech and Virginia, and neither of them play each other.
Well,
they don't play each other. So, I mean, you know, I think I already kind of touched on that before. That's the thing with these expanded conferences is it's annoying how there isn't nobody. People don't play each other. There's not like a ton of mutual matchups where you end up with these scenarios. And that's, kind of annoys me. But
yeah, with bigger conferences, like you're going to have more undefeated teams that like would have normally lost because they would have played each other in the regular season. You know what I mean?
It worked a lot better when there were divisions and that was the norm. Yeah. And that's why I kind of don't like the death of divisions and conferences, because like with the division, you ultimately are building your team around beating your division. It's like how the NFL does it. Like you build your team to try to beat the teams in your division. That's what you got to do.
Yeah.
Exactly. And now you kind of lack that. It's kind of a free for all. So it was just trying to build the best general all-star team of sorts instead of a team to get through your division. And I feel like that also waters down the sport a good bit.
A little bit.
Because it makes it hard to have a true identity. I think you're going to see teams kind of lose identities over time.
Happened to us.
And you're going to see a lot of generalist teams with plug-and-play schemes and plug-and-play players, play styles, which I don't want to see that happen. I hope divisions kind of come back to be more popular. I do like what the SEC is doing with our little 14 pods. I think that's a much better solution. Not a perfect solution, but much better than just having a giant 16-team conference where number one and number two go.
Well, in 5 years when there's the just one big mega conference that's not even in the NCAA, I'm sure they'll figure something out to make it more regional.
So, all right. And the ninth slot, we also have 5-2 USC at 6-2 Nebraska. Now, technically, USC only has one conference loss. You have any thoughts on this game as a Big Ten supporter for a classic Big Ten game?
I hate Nebraska, dude. I hate Nebraska, and I hope USC pantses them. I like, my ideal scenario is Matt Rhule leaves Nebraska. And so whatever needs to happen for that to happen, like, maybe in a way if Nebraska wins, it makes him a little bit more elevated in Penn State's eyes. Like, whatever it takes to get Matt Rhule out of there just to make Nebraska fans sad. That's all I care about.
Again, this is another situation. USC technically only has one conference loss.
Yeah.
They do play Oregon later in the season.
They could win that.
But there's only two undefeated teams in conference in the Big Ten. Yeah. That's Indiana and Ohio State. And USC plays neither of them. So it's like, I mean, what are you going to do? Ohio State and Indiana don't play each other. So you just got to hope one of them. It's just weird to have these super conferences without a lot of mutual games.
Yeah, like it's going to be tough, you know, so. I don't know. It's what we signed up for, I guess, with this new brave new world that we're in.
And the final game of the slate is going to be at 9:15, Cincinnati 7-1 at 6-2, 3-2 in conference, Utah. Utah's obviously probably out of the race.
Yeah.
But do you think Utah can pull this out? Do you think they will pull it off?
You know.
Also, this is finally a 9:15 game I really want to actually tune into the playoff implications.
Yeah, a little Big 12 after dark. Maybe I'll stay up for this one. We'll see. It's tough because like I have a hard time watching Cincinnati because of, you know, the situation. but like knowing how the world works, I'm guessing Cincinnati will win this game and probably make a push for the playoffs just because like it would really, you know, it'd be the big like I told you so kind of a thing to Luke Fickell. Like, look at how good we are now that you're gone sort of a bit.
I mean, they improved after getting rid of Fickell. I don't know if that tells you anything.
That's indicative. Yeah. Oh, one game I
there's actually. Go ahead. Well, it might be the one I was about to talk about.
There's two games. One we missed a little before that. Real quick, let's talk Oklahoma, Tennessee. Do you think the winner of this game makes the playoffs?
No.
Wow.
Just to be honest, I think Tennessee.
Okay.
Oklahoma's probably going to win. Okay. But Tennessee, I feel like, is way more fraudulent than people give them credit for. Their defense is bad, man. It's bad. And their offense just feasts on bad defenses. One time they played a good defense, us, they threw a game-losing pick six, right?
Right.
They couldn't get it done.
Okay.
The one it was game, not tough. It was very easy to watch. Go
something
ahead.
That we glossed over here that we didn't discuss is the Pac-12 championship, Randy. Washington State at Oregon State. Who are both currently 0-0 in the Pac-12. This is the Pac-12 championship. So it's always weird to see this, you know, this game. It's like, it's wild that the Pac-12 still technically exists. Like, we don't really acknowledge it. other than like in past tense, but it's still technically a real thing. What do you make of this game?
I'm
Randy?
Looking at it.
Yeah.
So I'm looking on ESPN and I'm looking at Washington State's team and it has their conference on the sidebar. Yep. 2025 Pac-12 standings, and it literally just has them, Washington State and Oregon State.
So sad, dude. Yeah.
And yeah, the death of the pack is sad.
Dude, neither of these schools have like done well in the post you know, Pac-12 falling apart world. I mean, Oregon State is 1-7, which is wild. This is what they get for stealing Gary Anderson. I don't know. They kind of had it coming, but still, dude. Like, they just got their first win of the season against Lafayette. They beat the Lafayette Leopards, folks, but have lost to every other opponent. So, I don't know, man.
Kind of, it is what it is. I did actually want to talk about Navy at North Texas, since I believe, actually Tulane, I believe, is the odds-on favorite. But this is going to be a sort of setting up for the AAC championship game. It's going to kind of help shake out the conference race a little bit.
Yeah.
North Texas has a high-flying offense, great quarterback. Navy does play Notre Dame, South Florida, Memphis later in the year. So it's interesting because I think, obviously, the AAC champion is going to be the playoff representative, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
But
yeah. Should be a good one.
Yeah, just an interesting game. I'm probably going to actually watch at 11 a.m. That's a group of five game.
I think really like the modest. Yeah, kind of like the overall vibe of this week is like, yeah, on paper, there's no big like top 10 matchups or whatever, but like there's a lot of potential playoff implications. Like, you know, we're 4 weeks away at this point. Like, this is kind of crunch time, and we're going to kind of be able to see some separation between the teams that are legit and the teams that, you know, hopefully have a little bit better luck next year.
This is the prime spot where Cinderella start to fall apart.
Yeah.
And where, you know, 3-5 teams that had a little trouble getting started that are better than their record indicates can kind of prove something. It's bound to happen. And yeah, we have so many opportunities, with a ton of them being away games. Yes. For the 7-1, 8-0 team.
Yeah.
I did want to actually ask you one last question before we wrap up. So we have 6-2 Washington at 2-6 Wisconsin. What do you want to see from Luke Fickell, Wisconsin, given the fact that you kind of talked about, okay, we're going to give him one more year, and you didn't sound too beat up about it. So would you like to see?
Well, first of all, I'll be seeing this next weekend because that's not coming up this week. But I will say,
I see that now. Sorry. You have a bye week.
I'll say this, Randy, what we want to see is competence. Like, we just want to have dignity. Dignity is the one word that's been, like, kind of rolling through my mind lately, is Wisconsin does not have any dignity right now. And we can accept the losses. We knew we were going to lose, like, all these games. Like, we accept that, right? But, like, historically, we've had dignity with death. And that's just not been the case this season. So that's what I'm
even when you played us. Yeah. I remember when you played us in 2015, there was dignity in that because of the simple fact that I remember, I think it was Joel Stavi, first drive of the game.
Yep.
First drive of the game. He went down, picked apart our defense, and scored against what was one of the best defenses in college football history. So I feel like that's like that's dignity. Dignity and death.
Dignity and death. Yep. That's all I want.
I get it. You're gonna have a great opportunity at Minnesota in the season. I feel like that would feel
that would be good.
That'd
be amazing for morale, dude. If we could just like literally just win that game, like that would be enough, I think, to like
it could be the spark to actually get things kind of right the next year, if that's even a possibility. It's something to finally give. You need hope.
Hope.
I don't know. Would you consider the Oregon game a dignified loss or no?
Our defense had dignity. The offense not so much.
Okay.
But that's a start.
So what about
that's a start.
What about the Michigan game where you lost 24-10?
No. No digging there.
No, okay.
That was the beginning of the end.
Fair enough. Folks, I was just curious for your perspective. Oh, go ahead.
Folks, I hope you all have dignity in your weekend. That's my segue here. Randy, thank you for this episode of the Pitching Podcast. It's been fun. Jumping it up with you. Again, folks, enjoy the weekend. Let's hope it's a good one. Plenty of memorable games that we're kind of calling right now. Has potential upsets. So stay tuned, folks. And until next time, Roll Tide.
On Wisconsin.